and welcome to the latest episode of Propelling Talent, presented by Wykert Workforce Mobility. It's been a while since we recorded a new episode, and since that time, we've been seeing business and really society in general take a few steps closer to some sense of normal, but we're not quite back there yet. On the international stage, we've got global travel restrictions, tax and visa regulations, and many businesses still not returning to offices. So still a ways to go until we get back to quote-unquote normal. That said, one component of relocation that has been fairly robust is the U.S. real estate markets. Inventory in many regions has hit record lows. Home prices are up. We get reports of bidding wars, houses selling in minutes, seconds, you know, whole towns being bought up. It's craziness out there if you listen to the news. But what does it all mean, and how does it impact employee relocation, and what do people who manage corporate programs need to know? And we're going to examine the U.S. real estate market in this episode. And guiding that discussion will be Laura Levinson, global practice leader of our advisory services practice, and Betsy Roach, VP of the Wykert Broker Network. I want to thank you both for joining us today. And Laura, I want to hand things over to you to sort of lead the questioning here, because a lot of what happens in the real estate market impacts the guidance that you give to our corporate clients. So I'll hand you the microphone and let you start the program.
Thank you so much, Tim. Yeah, I don't have to really work hard to come up with things to talk about, because we get so many questions. And lately, as you might imagine, many of the questions have had to do with the current state of the real estate market and how we should be responding in the mobility industry. As a matter of fact, I was looking at some online news sources today, and according to something called the M Report, which is a mortgage and banking news publication, they show that research from Zillow concluded a significant number of homeowners say they're more likely to move and sell their home as a result of the pandemic. And that represents an additional 2.5 million households that could all enter an already tight real estate market driven by this unrelenting demand that you just spoke of when you said houses selling in minutes and bidding wars and the like. So really, life, I guess, and financial uncertainty were listed as top reasons that homeowners haven't listed their homes for sale during this time. But on the other side of that, now that there's a vaccine out there, it seems likely that that will change and even more people might be more willing to actually go through the physical process of moving right now. And Zillow data confirmed that finding 70% of homeowners said they would be comfortable moving to a new home now that there has been fairly widespread vaccination distribution. So I'm going to ask Betsy if you wouldn't mind telling us what you see is going on in the U.S. real estate market overall. We'll start at the high level for this past year or more that we've been in the pandemic. I know that what I've heard is people say that it's a perfect storm, and I'd love to hear in your words, What does that mean?
It's a very interesting real estate market, and I've been in the real estate and relocation world for my whole career, which is quite a long time. And although we see markets come and go and go up and go down, this market has been particularly different and interesting than markets we've seen in the past. I was watching a short video by Dr. Lawrence Yoon, who's the chief economist for the National Association of Realtors. And he was just looking back at March 2021 data and also year over year. And basically what he said is we have home prices rising and mortgage rates rising, which you would think would be the reason why things would fall off, that sales momentum would fall off. But he said, really, it has fallen off just a little in March, but he said it's due to insufficient inventory. And Tim mentioned that in the introduction, that there is just not enough inventory to meet the demand. And then he gave numbers. So he said today in the U.S. market, there are about 1 million homes on the market, where 2 to 3 million is normal. And that's the first time I had heard those exact numbers. And I just thought, wow, it's like a third of what is normal. So it's no wonder we're seeing the craziness out there. The other thing that I think that is so interesting is that this market seems ubiquitous all over the country. So it's not just the places where we usually see the market go crazy up, go crazy down. And those, you know, those are the typical markets we think of on either coast, you know, the New Yorks, the San Franciscos, the LAs, the Bostons, that type of thing, where those markets go up and down dramatically. In this situation, we have markets that are performing so crazy, so strong, with prices going up and inventory just at an all-time low in all parts of the country. And I find that to be very unusual. You know, even in parts of the country that we always kind of think of like steady eddy markets, in places like Cleveland, Ohio, or Pittsburgh, or Kansas City, Missouri, or that type of thing, those markets don't usually experience the drastic ups and downs that the major metros often do. But right now they're seeing the same situation that we're seeing on the coasts and in the major metros. They're seeing multiple offers, low inventory, prices going up, bidding wars, all those things. So,
well, I'm in the suburbs of New York City.
Yes.
And here in the suburbs, it is pretty crazy because folks are trying to get out of New York as quickly as they can. So, are there any, would you say that that's the case in most metropolitan areas, that people are moving away from the city centers? Or are there any cities, smaller cities maybe, where people are moving to?
Well, first of all, when the pandemic first started, the real estate market just came to almost a practical standstill. And, you know, everybody was scared to death. But then things picked up. Once we were able to open up a little bit and open up safely and show homes safely, that was probably around June of 2020. Once we got into the summer, the market really started to take off. And you saw a lot of exodus from New York and also other major metropolitan areas like Boston, Chicago, especially places where we are densely populated and people are living in high-rise apartments and condos and stuff like that.
Sure.
People wanted to get out. They wanted to have land all of a sudden, et cetera. The good news is that that has started to level off. And honestly, people are actually starting to move back into those places. So that's good news for some of the urban centers. But on the other hand, you know, because people have been working remotely for a year, those people who are employed and are able to work, do their work, not in the office, those people now are saying, well, let's move to where we always wanted to live. You know, why are we living in New Jersey? Why not move to South Carolina where the weather's better and taxes are lower, or people are moving to Phoenix or Florida? I saw, I think it might have been a North American Van Lines study where they were showing the patterns of migration. So it's, you know, it's going from areas in the north and the northeast to places in the south or in the west. So it's really, but it's just all over. It's kind of crazy.
Yeah. Even though I totally agree, it seems like it's starting in some ways, maybe slowing down a little bit, but in relative terms,
yeah,
I think it's still pretty volatile. And right. I guess the question then is, what does this mean first from the buyer's perspective and then from the seller's perspective? And then we'll start diving in deeper into the relocation industry specifically.
Well, I think everyone is pretty conscious of the fact that for the buyers in this market, they're in, you know, never has it been so competitive in most markets in the U.S. where, again, because there's just not enough homes on the market, there are more buyers than there are sellers. So it's making it really difficult for buyers. And even though I know people will look out and say, oh, wow, the real estate brokers are making out like bandits, I mean, that's I mean, to a certain extent, that's true. But for the agents out there, it's really tough because you have to make multiple, you've got to bid on more than one property in order to get a house. And in normal times, that's not generally what happens. You know, you find the house you want, you take your time, you're able to look at it, you go back, maybe look at it again. In this market, you can't do that. You've got to be prepared and you've got to make quick decisions if you want a house. And then you still may not get the house that you are bidding on because, you know, there might be 15 or 20 other people also bidding on it. So for the buyers out there, it's really a tough market right now. For the sellers, you know, it's probably never been a better time to be a seller.
Well, I just can't help but think that for people who must be relocating, there's right. got to be even deeper impact. And so I know, and I'll get to it later in terms of what sort of recommendations we've made when it comes to policy. But I'm just curious what you've seen so far is the impact not only on people who are transferring within the United States for a permanent move, but also what about folks who are going on an international assignment and it's not permanent? You know, are they still trying to sell because it's a great market? What are you seeing there?
So I'm certainly more familiar with the domestic U.S. moves, but I would say that, again, it's a great time to sell. So transferees want to sell their homes, but then you got to find a place to live. And so it's just a little more challenging to find a home to buy, and it may take longer. That's the other thing. So those are hard situations for a transferee who needs to get to a new location and settle in and get their family settled in too. So you know, we are seeing some people decide to hold off purchasing. They sell their homes, but they don't purchase right away and they're looking to rent. What's interesting there, I think, is that you might think, well, renting is a good option instead of buying. But if you're looking to rent a single family home right now, that's a challenge as well, because there just are not a lot of single family homes to rent because, again, people are selling their homes, right? So it's crazy, but there are multiple offers being made on single family rentals, which I honestly, I have to say, I've never heard of that. I mean, I'm sure there's more situations like that, but I've never heard of that being like a common occurrence. So generally speaking, and of course it can vary from one market to another, but apartment rental is not so difficult. People need a place to live. And, you know, I think there has been a lot of building of apartment complexes in a lot of markets. So that's not so bad. But if you need something more than a standard two bedroom, and you want a single family home or a town home, those are just a little more difficult. So anyway, that creates some real challenges for our transferees who need to move now.
That's right. Yeah. And from what I see, especially families, when it's a family situation, usually you do need at least two bedrooms, three if there's two children. And right. then maybe four bedrooms if one of them is going to be serving as an office, right?
So yeah that's a very good
definitely
point. Yes, that's great.
I know that on the international side, we have had questions, you know, should we let our assignees who are not moving permanently, should we let them sell their homes because it's such a great opportunity? And we, you know, we recommend caution because remember, if you help them sell, that means you're going to have to help them buy when they return. So, you know, we're not necessarily encouraging it, even if the market is good. It really depends on the company's plan for that individual. So let's shift our attention a little. What can we do about this? What can transferees do when they're competing with this whole bidding situation?
Transferees tend to be strong buyers, especially if they own a home at the old location that they're selling. through a BBO program or a guaranteed buyout, but they make for strong buyers. So that's a positive. But any buyer in this market needs to, first of all, be armed with a pre-approval. They need to make sure they have been in touch with a mortgage lender and they've got their, you know, not just a pre-qualification, but a pre-approval that will show the seller that they're serious and that they have the means to buy the home. So that's first and foremost. Then if they are able to pay cash, that will make a huge difference in terms of putting them at the top of the heap of a list of buyers. I don't think most people are in that situation, but if they happen to have a lot of equity in their old home, those are huge advantages. Some common things that a realtor can help them with is, for instance, doing an escalation clause. So you make an offer and you put an escalation clause in there that indicates how high you're willing to go if there are other offers higher than your initial one. So that's a common option. The other thing that buyers are doing in this market is they're waiving contingencies. So when a seller's looking at multiple offers, they're going to look at those offers that have the fewest contingencies. So it's not always price that rules the day. It's a combination of a good price, but also fewer contingencies. So nobody's going to accept an offer that's contingent on the sale of another home, right? Nobody's going to do that in this
right.
business.
What are some other examples of contingencies besides that?
Mortgage contingency is a big one, right? But people are waiving that. I mean, that's tricky and that can be dangerous unless you're really, really confident that that won't be an issue. The other thing is people are waiving the appraisal contingency. So typically in a normal market, if the appraisal, the bank appraisal comes in lower than the offer that you're making, then usually the buyer and seller go back and renegotiate and or the buyer can get out of the deal. So buyers are saying, I waive that option. And if the appraisal doesn't come in high enough, I will come up with the cash to make up the difference. So again, you have to be in a pretty good position to do that. But if you're prepared to do any of these things, it's going to put you in a better position. And again, transfers are not buying their first home are certainly in a, you know, in a stronger position typically than a lot of buyers are.
It sounds like waiving the contingency of an appraisal could be risky, and also just the idea that there could be a future loss on sale situation. What do you think some of these long-term risks would be in this current market?
Yeah, well, one thing I didn't mention too is that buyers are waiving inspections. That is a contingency, which doesn't mean they're not doing inspections, but basically what they're doing is saying, I'm going to, unless there is a huge structural problem or, you know, they'll spell out, I won't come back to the seller for, you know, minor repairs and that type of thing. So I would certainly, and I'm sure most realtors would advise a buyer against waiving all inspections or all issues, because again, if there's a structural or a huge mechanical problem in a home, you could be stuck with, you know, a real lemon. And that's obviously a huge problem down the road. So I guess the long-term worry, right, is that oftentimes the people that we're working with, transferring employees, are going to move again, and they're going to move in a few years, not 10 or 12 or 20 years like a lot of us, but rather they're going to move in, 3 to 5 years. So there is some concern, right, that we may see prices soften down the road and perhaps get into a situation where we see loss on sale down the road that we're not seeing today.
This is cyclical too.
Right.
What are some things do you think that people can do to reduce the risk? I mean, it's kind of like we just said, okay, well, you have to be willing to take some risk, right? But what are some things that, sort of speaking out of the other side of your mouth, if you could, what are some things that people could do to reduce the risk?
Again, be careful in terms of what contingencies you are willing to waive. Things that you might have gone back to a seller on, like minor, fix this window or change that light bulb or whatever, those, minor things you can live with that, or, understand what you can handle in terms of repairs on your own that you're willing to deal with. But don't go crazy eliminating all those things. And just assess your own appetite for risk as far as that goes. Mm-hmm. I mean, renting, and holding off until the market changes a little bit, that might be an option right now. Again, I just talked to you about rentals can be difficult too, but for instance, if you can live in an apartment, a two-bedroom apartment, you're coming from a four-bedroom house and you're going into a two-bedroom apartment, if you can do that for a little while, there is some thought that as the year goes on, as 2021 goes on, that the inventory will start to improve, because as we start to put this pandemic behind us, as more people are vaccinated, as the risks of the disease are getting behind us, there is pent-up demand to sell homes. But a lot of people have resisted putting their homes on the market during the pandemic for obvious reasons. They didn't want people traipsing through their house.
That's right. Yeah,
right?
For sure. For sure.
So as that stuff starts to neutralize, I think we will start to see an improvement in the supply of homes on the market. So it may not be a long-term situation. It could be, 6 to 12 months from now. I would expect that our inventory is going to improve. So that might be another option at this time.
This has really been really, really interesting. And now I'm gonna really upset you with those last questions. if you had a crystal ball, don't you hate questions mm-hmm. that start like that? If you had a crystal ball, kind of answered it already by saying how long you think it would last, and that things are gonna hopefully start getting better this year or later this year. But when it comes to like which markets do you think are going to remain hot, if you will, and which ones do you think will, I guess the word could be recover. Recovery in this case, meaning more inventory and just more balance. Right. Do you have any feelings about how that's going to go?
The biggest question people have wondered is, are we going to see a bubble burst? And that's worrisome, right? If I'm buying at the mm-hmm. top of the market and I'm paying over list price, which is what's happening routinely now, I'm worried that the bubble's going to burst and now I'm going to be in a bad position. But mm-hmm. I've really been following, again, the National Association of Realtors, also other brokers out there who've been through a lot of things and do a lot of analysis. And what they're saying is that it's really unlikely that we're going to see, first of all, a bubble burst, because it's really not a bubble. It's just a kind of we're in unusual circumstances, but our mortgage, our mortgage situation is way different than it was when we went into recession in 2008. We don't have those risky mortgages that we had back then, which put a lot of people in a very bad position because they just didn't have liquidity in their homes. Mm-hmm. Today, they have liquidity, and the mortgage requirements are so much different and stronger than they were back then. So anyway, because we don't have that, and it's going to take a while to get back to normal inventory. So even though I said that inventory should improve towards the end of the year and into the next year, I don't think we're going to get back to a normal situation where we have 3 million homes on the market anytime in the next 2 years. So I think we will continue to have fairly strong markets overall. And again, I think some of the places that have typically been really strong, like the New York metropolitan area and the Boston metro and the LA metro and, you know, San Francisco areas, I think those areas, they will maybe see a little dip versus the Phoenixes and the Miamis and even the Charlottes and Dallas, Texas areas. So I don't have a crystal ball, but some of people who are much smarter than me, that's some of their thoughts.
Well, thank you so much. We'll be checking back with you, I think, in a year or maybe sooner to see where we are, because hopefully it will be sooner than that. Hopefully we'll have a reason to celebrate on many levels.
Right. Absolutely. Pleasure.
That is some great perspective from the real estate expert side. And Laura, I just wanted to close it out by asking a question of you from the relocation advisory services side. And that is, in your discussions with clients, with corporate program managers, what seems to be, it's actually a two-part question, what seems to be the most common question you're fielding these days, the most common concern in this heated market? And what is the policy and or program advice that you find yourself most doling out these days in regards to the real estate market?
The truth of the matter is we decided to have this talk because we've been getting more questions. It started with this concern over waiving contingencies. Like what will happen in the long run if we waive inspections and appraisals and then there's problems later. So the risk factor and the questions have been coming more from the HR side, concerned about how much responsibility HR will have to take if there are losses suffered by their employees. So that's been a question. Another has been a much more general question, you know, what, if any, policy changes should we make when it comes to home sale and home purchase? And it depends on how old the company's policy is. I'd have to start with that because, for example, an older policy might have a lot of language around loss on sale with pretty high numbers. If a company is looking to start from scratch, it might be advisable to not even mention loss on sale in its current market and deal with it when the time comes, because that is one area that we do see a lot of change. You know, there's some times when loss on sale is really necessary to cover and other times when it's not, and that can change by market too. So that's one I always say, take a look at that clause if you're looking to make big changes to your policy. So that was one. On the other hand, we've also said probably now is not a time to do anything super drastic because this is not going to last forever. We have had a couple of clients who have increased the cap on the home value to qualify for the BVO program. So in other times, the cap has been $500,000 or $600,000. Now some companies are lifting it up to $1 million because their policy was older. They are operating in much more volatile markets and things like that. Because as you might realize that in New York, New Jersey, Connecticut area, $1 million isn't even a lot. It's not even really a crazy amount. And that would be the same for San Francisco and other markets. So those are a couple of things. And then Betsy touched on this a little. Some companies are looking to either allow or even provide incentive to rent temporarily before making the commitment to buy. So they're not overbuying or, you know, purchasing beyond what they should be in a given market. So I kind of like that one. But as Betsy mentioned, that's not always feasible if the rental market is tight as well. So at the end of the day, when I'm giving advice, it really does help to know a little more about the details of the markets that the company is in, whether or not they think people are quote unquote permanent or just temporary, and really taking into account a number of different factors when it comes to making those decisions.
Yeah, and I was going to just add too, maybe we've definitely seen where companies are allowing a little more temporary housing, you know, than they might have otherwise. And I'm not suggesting companies would necessarily change their policies, but be sensitive to that, because it can take longer to find a home than in a normal situation. So
right. And so then if you do that, that might impact other things as well in terms of storage and so on. So there is a bit of a there's a bit of a holistic impact, and that's something that people definitely need to keep in mind. It, that once you do one thing, then it's very likely that it's going to impact other parts of the move process. So that's why it's really good to have the counseling on what to do and when to do it, especially in these volatile times.
Well, that's some excellent advice from both the real estate side and the workforce mobility program and policy side. I want to thank Betsy for sharing her extensive insight to the U.S. real estate market with us today. And Laura, thank you for putting it in a relocation program management perspective. If you have any questions for our experts, you can feel free to send them to us at solutions@weichertwm.com, weichertwm.com. And be sure to check out our blog at weichertworkforcemobility.com/blog. It's a mouthful, but it's worth it for the latest trends and insights. And we hope you subscribe to our podcast, or at the very least, be on the lookout for our next episode. In the meantime, on behalf of our experts, thank you for listening, and we'll see you next time.